This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
That's my biggest criticism of CSR and of the corporate realm in general, is that companies are not measuring their own sustainability. They're measuring proxies of sustainability.
Corporate social responsibility, or CSR. What is it exactly? The Wikipedia entry says, the goal of CSR is to embrace responsibility for a company's actions and encourage a positive impact through its activities on the environment and members of the public. Sounds really good, but not everyone involved in this sort of work embraces the term CSR. Today on Sea Change Radio, we'll talk with Carol Sanford, who believes her approach to responsible business is distinct from CSR. And for those of you who are longtime listeners, you'll be happy to hear from our second guest, Bill Bowie, CSR pioneer and Sea Change Radio founder. Bowie provides a thorough overview of what CSR is and could be, and speaks to why some consultants pushing the business sector to be more mindful of its environmental and social impact don't use the term corporate social responsibility. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is author and consultant Carol Sanford. She's the author of the book, The Responsible Business, and people can learn more about her work at carolsanford.com. Carol, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Can you tell us how your approach differs from a traditional CSR approach, Carol?
Sure. Let me start by saying that I share the same intentions, the same goals that the growing and I think valuable CSR movement has created. But I think that it's time for us to really look at whether or not the way we're going about it is going to get us where it is that we think that we really need to be going with those intentions. So my particular way of working on it is to say, I think we need to, instead of working on fragments, on pieces, on the supply chain separate from the marketing, that we've really got to shift to that we're starting with something that is much more whole. And let me give you an example of that so it makes a little more sense. Seventh Generation, who makes non-toxic household and personal care products, which probably many of your listeners know about, I worked with for about 4 years. And when we started, they were working in this way where every part and piece was being worked on. People were being worked on separate from the supply chain group who was working on making things greener and from the R&D group. We backed up and we said, what are the global imperatives out beyond the company? So you start with Earth, with the health that's there, with the society that's there, and made some statements about what it was they were really pursuing. So one, for example, was they believed that educated citizens make better democratic or democracy participants. Well, now if you start asking the question from that position, you can have everyone in the business working on what are they doing to build better critical thinkers. Same thing was true of Earth. They said, we call them life sheds instead of watersheds, but a life shed, you have to really understand it in each unique place. So they began to look at how each location might be engaged at each place with a capital P, rather than something like the rivers separate from the forest. So I think the real key I'm talking about is let's start with wholes rather than parts and fragments, whereby we have too many people working on independent separate pieces and many people working on nothing in the business because they assume it's the professional's responsibility, not theirs.
Talk a little bit more about some of the steps that you believe separate your philosophy from traditional CSR methods?
I don't start with questions about corporate social responsibility. That's like a program. That's like a concept over there, independent from the business. And that's the way it's usually run. I start with, what businesses are you in? And of those businesses, which ones do you really need to improve how they run? And you know that, therefore, you've got to enrich the life of the consumer who buys it. It may be a customer who's a distribution channel. I start with having them actually think about the business and connect it outside, because the reason we can't do good ecological thinking, the reason we can't do good societal thinking, is we are too inward focused as human beings. It is a missing ingredient for us to move from kind of what I call internal considering, it's all about me, to external considering, is everything I touch is affecting someone else. So I first have to build that capacity in a business to actually move to this external way of thinking. And believe it or not, only a handful of people in a business actually think about the customer. Actually, mostly the salespeople and a few others. Most people really think about their job, their function internally. So the very first step has to be getting them to think external. Starting with your customers isn't a bad one. But then I add something unique to that, which is, how is it that you not just go do customer surveys? In fact, I oppose those. I think surveys should never happen. What you want to do is wrap teams that are inside the business so that everyone in the organization is on a team to be a champion for the improvement in the life of a particular buyer set, buyer knows. Like in Colgate-Palmolive, we wrapped them around the big box stores like Carrefour, and then also around the mom and pop stores. In the case of Seventh Generation, we wrapped them around particular buyers like people who were really wellness driven and they were trying to be healthy, deep greens, and even others who had sensitivities to the environment. Now, if you're working wherever you are in the organization and you're holding in mind the effect on that customer or consumer in every action you take, not some program that's setting programmatic things for a few people to do, like in a supply chain, but everybody is thinking about the consumer, you've just shifted the mind to outside. So the book you will find is a lot about getting that capability to move from us and us and us to the world outside. Now, one of the ways that you bring that in, and I'll bring back in LifeSheds, is when you get every, what I call them co-creators, every employee, supplier, contractor connected to the life of that consumer or customer, the charter that you give them out of the imperatives that you develop as a business is, how do you now make Earth healthier in order to serve the life health of that customer? Now, in order to do that, you actually can't look at everything generic. You can't say, well, all waters are alike, all rivers are alike, all plants clean themselves the same. You have to start looking at life shed by life shed. Now, the reason I use that word is watershed is a human-centered way of saying it. It's like, that's where our water comes from. Or now there are new people who say food shed, but that's still human-centered. That's where our food comes from. Life actually is in that shed. It has to do with a lot more than us. So education is a huge component. And if you are chartering these co-creators in serving the health of that customer to actually ask how every time they make a choice, can they improve the health of the life shed that they're going to affect and the communities that they're going to affect, you have a very different working process than anything that a CSR team does.
And within a, let's take a company, for example, that has 40, 50,000 employees and a social responsibility division of a handful of people. What are some of the chances for that to succeed, and where do you see that falling short?
Well, most of the businesses I work with no longer have CSR departments in the traditional sense. Let's talk about what Seventh Generation does.
No, wait, can you just stick to my question, because I wanted to...
Well, I don't have any companies that have CSR departments.
We had a design futurist on a few weeks ago on SeaChange Radio, Natalia Allen, who was talking about how you can't really expect a company with 50,000 employees to completely change the way they do business if they have a handful of people working on CSR. How does that align with your philosophies, Carol?
Well, I think, yes, I think that's true. And for a couple of reasons, that's true. And I'll suggest what I think you do differently. One, with a handful of people, you don't have deep enough spread across the organization to have very much impact. And most of those departments do all the work themselves. At a minimum, they, you know, try and get go out and gather information. Most of them are report gathering, their certification connecting. But I think that one of the major things they have to do is shift to being educating units. Some groups call their group corporate consciousness, where what they're doing is trying to make the corporation conscious. But those groups would have to be deeply connected to something much bigger than CSR as a concept. They have to get connected to the life of the consumer or customer, and usually they're focused out almost exclusively just on green and sustainable questions. Some corporations will have social responsibility functions, and they'll be thinking about how the fair trade kinds of things work. But again, those don't really connect anybody across the company into the outside. In order to change that, it has to become a way of doing business. It has to become something that is really led by the people who make the decisions. And in my businesses, we get it so it's not just the senior executives, but it's people deeper into the organization. One of the things that we've done that's made that really effective is to set up these teams where everybody in the organization is connected to some life force, some customers, some life sheds. And then the CSR department becomes staff to them in some sense. They become resources to them in being able to go get what they need and understand how it works. I mean, that's exactly what the Colgate Group, which did, which is the size of company you're talking about. The people who had been responsible in roles, which were everything from supervisors to responsibility functions, became resources out like threads into these organizations, but they were not responsible for it. They were the educators and the resources to it. And I think that could make a big difference for a department that already exists.
Carol Sanford, author and consultant. People can go to carolsanford.com to learn more. Thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Alex, it was great fun. Thank you.
Change yet. Some people fly high, begin to lose sight. It's horrible. You can't see very clear when you're in flight. It's high time that you find the same use on your way up. You might meet them on your way down.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
My guest today on Sea Change Radio, he's the founder of Sea Change Radio, Bill Bowie. Bill, welcome back to Sea Change Radio. Great to have you here.
Alex, it's such a pleasure to be back on Sea Change. And thanks so much for your great work of carrying the torch forward.
Well, you set a lofty goal here, and we're just trying to keep things moving along. Why don't you tell our guests what corporate social responsibility is and what the CSR world is to you?
Sure. It really came around in earnest in the early 70s as a response to the socially responsible investing movement, where investors were pushing companies to take more accountability for their impacts on the environment and on society. And so it's developed over the last 30 or 40 years into a more formalized process within companies. To a varying degree, it's got different expressions at different companies, but it's evolved into what Jim Bendel, one of your guests in the past, has called a movement, the corporate responsibility movement. And so that encompasses not just people in companies who are working in the corporate social responsibility departments, but also the whole ecosystem of activists who work for non-governmental organizations, regulators who are holding companies accountable for their sustainability impacts, and even consultants. Like I now consult to companies and try to help them be more responsible. So there's a whole field that has developed around this. And from my perspective, it's been somewhat successful. I don't think that it has been as successful as it needs to be. And so we've got people like Wayne Visser who are calling for what he calls CSR 2.0, which is basically recognizing that the first iteration, the first generation of corporate social responsibility hasn't really achieved what its potential is. It hasn't transformed companies to be fully responsible and fully sustainable. That's still an ongoing goal. So that's in a nutshell my you know, initial thoughts on CSR.
Earlier in the program, we spoke to Carol Sanford, who's a consultant in the space, but she eschews the label corporate social responsibility. Give us a little bit of the different schools of thought that go into a company embracing consultant X, Y, or Z, and where you think the game is heading.
Well, I'll start off by saying that I have deep respect for Carol's work. And I think ultimately, Carol and I and many others in the space see eye to eye in terms of the end goal. The end goal is a company that has responsibility and sustainability baked into its core and that it applies across all operations. So, you know, I don't think that there's really much difference of opinion in the field in terms of what we're all striving towards. I think where
is it just the term CSR you think that has a negative connotation to some people? Because she says that the idea of corporate social responsibility is anathema to her. But to me, it seems like that's the kind of work that she's doing. Could you explain a little bit more for people who are scratching their head along with me?
Yeah. Well, I think that for those of us operating in this field, it's a fairly familiar cycle. You know, once every 3 or 4 months, an article comes out. You know, it was in the Wall Street Journal a while ago, you know, earlier this year. Mark Gunther, a very respected journalist on CSR who writes for Green Biz and Fortune magazine, recently profiled Carol. And Carol, you know, espoused many of these ideas. And there was, you could go and see the comment stream, and there was a really robust debate afterwards that I contributed to as well. You know, essentially it's what I said before, that we're all in agreement on the ultimate objective. And it's really a question in some senses around language, the language of calling it corporate social responsibility. I think in Carol's instance, it's really around the structure.
And as we've seen from politics and people like George Lakoff, language really is important.
Absolutely. And in fact, I'm working on a project right now called the Sustainability Lexicon with Deborah Leipziger, who's a well-respected CSR consultant. And it's really to create a wiki that both documents the current state of language around sustainability, but also seeks to invent the new terms that we need in order to be sustainable. Like, we as a species don't really understand, or we've lost sight of how to be sustainable. And so we need to invent language to do that. So I see Carol really operating in this same kind of vein where you know, Carol Sanford's work is really around envisioning what a sustainable company, what a responsible company looks like, and trying to create that in a holistic way. So I agree with that, but where I differ with Carol is around the notion that we need to scrap CSR as it stands right now in the meanwhile.
It takes a long time for a term to get into our language and then to go back and to wistfully say, you know, corporate social responsibility is anathema to me, and so we need to just scrub the whole term and rethink across a whole platform. It may not be that productive an exercise.
Yeah, I think it's most likely going to be counterproductive, And that's my concern, I guess, is that there's a lot of good work that's happening that can be built upon instead of seeking to sort of destroy it. It'd be a kind of a throwing the baby out with the bathwater. That said, I do see that what Carol's pointing to is that there are significant structural problems of when a company has a CSR department that is simply a silo and doesn't have influence across the corporation, across the enterprise.
All that same thing. Oh, that same. Tell me who is to blame. The whole world fighting about that same thing.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is corporate sustainability expert Bill Bowie. You may recognize his voice if you've gone into the Sea Change Radio archives and heard some of the interviews he's conducted through the years as Sea Change Radio's founder. Bill, talk about... So we hear about these behemoth companies like GE and DuPont and Walmart, companies that are much maligned, and many would agree for good reason. Can these corporate social responsibility efforts that they're embarking on, which are impressive and can be a template for smaller companies, is it enough to heal some of what some may call the damage that they've already done, either in terms of market share or their actual business models? Or do you think that it's lessening the evil a little bit or lessening the blow that we're taking by having these huge companies dominating in spaces like the defense industry and retail?
Yeah, that's obviously a complicated question, Alex. But, my core thinking on that is that essentially right now, capitalism as we are enacting it is ultimately unsustainable. I don't think that we can continue operating the way that we do and expect to have a planet to survive on, anything like what civilization founded on, to riff on Jim Hansen. So I think that we really need to look at the fundamental basis of capitalism and of corporations as they're currently acting. So the companies that you named, GE and DuPont, I applaud them for doing really actually incredible work. I mean, probably better work than I'm doing personally at making my own self sustainable, in the sense that they are really rolling up their sleeves and making major changes. GE's eco-imagination work is really...
It's not greenwashing, huh? They're walking the walk.
They're walking the walk, but this is where I think that it goes to a deeper level is that...
But they also make a lot of bombs.
They make a lot of bombs. That's one thing. But then also the very processes that they're using to create beneficial products, that we're not measuring it to figure out, well, is it actually sustainable? And so I'd say my biggest criticism is that corporate sustainability hasn't actually embraced the measurement of sustainability, partly because that's an incredibly difficult thing to do. But, I'm working with the guy named Mark McElroy with the Center for Sustainable Organizations. And, he's working with Ben and Jerry's and with Cabot, some smaller players, but Ben and Jerry's is part of Unilever, so there's, the potential for it to go up the food chain there. And he's actually measuring whether the company's impacts are sustainable or not. And that's my biggest criticism of CSR and of the corporate realm in general, is that companies are not measuring their own sustainability. they're measuring proxies of sustainability. So for example, every self-respecting company is now measuring their carbon footprint. But until they measure their carbon footprint compared to whether that is contributing to bringing us all down to under 350 parts per million, which I'm sure all of our listeners know is the magic number, you know, companies have to say, yes, we are doing our part to bring the world down below that number. And it's called sustainability context. That's the wonky term for it. But essentially it means, you know, it's like we measure finances. We don't just measure expenses. We don't just measure profits. You have to measure profits compared to expenses. So we don't just measure carbon emissions. We have to measure carbon emissions compared to the world's ability to absorb those emissions collectively. So, I think that we're in an immature stage right now for corporate responsibility and corporate sustainability. But my hope is that the history of work that a dedicated crew of people have done up until this point is setting the stage for the kind of radical transformation that needs to happen, whether it comes from within or whether it comes as a response to some kind of disruptive event or events that force our hand at that.
So, Bill, for just a listener who is learning about corporate social responsibility for the first time, when they go into a store like a Target or a Safeway, how can they make informed decisions to know that this company isn't just pulling the wool over their eyes and greenwashing their brand into becoming more eco-friendly when it really isn't? And how can they differentiate, how can they separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, and get the companies that are actually making real positive change in this area?
Good question, Alex. I would point to two online resources. One of them is called Good Guide, and it's out of Berkeley, near where you're stationed. And it's essentially, it aggregates a whole bunch of different indicators, yardsticks, so to speak, of corporate responsibility on the product level.
That's goodguide.com.
Goodguide.com, and you can download an app for your phone. And you can go into a store, you can scan a product, and you can get a consolidated score that says, you know, this is a 65 or an 85 or whatever. I don't know if it's 100 or whatever. But it gives you a sense of the relative responsibility of that particular product. The other thing I'd look at is something called CSR Hub, csrhub.com. And it's similar to Good Guide, except for it doesn't look at it on the product level. It looks at it on the company level. So what CSR Hub does is it gathers together all sorts of ratings of corporate sustainability, and then it throws them into a hopper and sort of distills them into one number. So it aggregates a bunch of ratings and then gives you a normalized number that you can look at. And the other thing that it does that's pretty cool is it allows you as a consumer to prioritize. Let's say you're really concerned about the environment, you can filter out and just get the score for that company's environmental performance. If you're just into animal rights, you can filter out everything but animal rights. So it's a very flexible tool. And just for disclosure, I'm doing a little bit of work for them. So, you know, I may be biased.
Corporate sustainability expert Bill Bowie, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thanks so much. It's great to be back.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Boogaloo Joe Jones, Alan Toussaint, and Willie Dixon. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Sungevity Home Solar Specialists. Go to Sungevity.com to learn more. Check out our website at SeaChangeRadio.com. That's SeaChangeRadio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.